Well, good morning. My name is Chris Norman, and it's great to be here with you this morning. I'm on the team here at Grace, and had one of my best friends over at our house yesterday, and he and I were in high school together, and we both graduated from the University of Michigan. We were roommates in college. He is in full-time ministry as well. He leads a church on the campus of the University of Michigan right there in Ann Arbor. And he was saying that he dreads the Sundays after Michigan has a big loss because it's like really hard for people to engage. I told him it's not so here, like people are dancing in the aisles on those kind of Sundays after a big Michigan loss. So anyway, it's just a little bit of a different environment, but we're glad to be here and glad that God is on the throne. Amen. Well, many of you know some of my story, and when I became a follower of Jesus, in fact, my buddy who was over last yesterday, I mean, we were drinking and drug buddies in high school, and we both came to Christ later in college. But I've never gotten over the testimony of the ways in which God has radically changed my life, and every time I have an opportunity to share how God has changed my life, I take it. I want to tell you the real short version just for a few moments. I didn't grow up in church. My high school years were about trying to seek the greatest number of experiences that would bring me the greatest amount of worldly pleasure. And I was successful for the most part at that. Never read the Bible. In fact, the little I heard about the Bible, I didn't like. As a freshman in college, I remember getting into debates on campus with campus pastors and Christians right in public on campus, debating them and arguing with them about how the Bible's full of errors, how the church is full of hypocrites, and I would never want to be a part of anything like that. Then after a series of events during my sophomore year in college while I was studying in London, I approached my host family toward the end of my sophomore year, and I said, "Pete, do you have a Bible that I could look at?" He dusted one off of his shelf and gave it to me to read. I went up to my room, and I started reading the book of Matthew for the first time, and as I read it, tears started coming down my eyes. It was the first day I believed. And Jesus began the journey of turning my life from one that was seeking my own pleasure to one that was seeking His glory. I had an encounter with the living God that night that I will never forget. My life has been changed forever. In a high school class of 350, at my class reunion, myself and my friend who was over yesterday, we were designated the most changed in our entire high school class. A stark contrast of once living in complete darkness and pursuing darkness as much as I possibly could to now one of seeking the light and following Jesus. Now, not everyone has this type of a dramatic sort of testimony, this massive outward change that takes place at conversion to Christ. But just by a show of hands, how many in the room, if you think about your personal testimony, is somewhat similar to mine? It's a very dramatic shift. You were living completely in darkness, completely one way, and all of a sudden you came to Christ, and you are a completely different person, and everyone around you sees this massive, stark contrast. Just by a show of hands, how many have a dramatic conversion story? Okay, maybe 10%. Not everyone has a dramatic testimony. I have some things to share this morning that are going to be super helpful for everyone in the room, but they are going to be especially helpful for those in the room who did not raise your hand when I just asked that question. It's going to be especially helpful for you as I share some of these things. Let me just give you the main point of the message right from the beginning, and then we'll just kind of unpack it here as we go along. It's this: turning to Jesus for salvation is always marked by an encounter with the living God inwardly, but that encounter isn't always dramatic outwardly. Let's just let that marinate for a few moments. Some things are true always, and then some things are different for different people. We're currently in this three-part series called Encounter. Paul McConaughey gave the first message last week. We have encounters. God is a personal and living God. He's wanting to be intimate and close with us, encountering us like we would encounter one another. And so we have massive encounters with God that forever change our lives. And then we have small encounters on a more frequent basis with the living God. And how do we understand just the difference between the process of getting to know God and following Him and the encounters that we have with Him at different points in our spiritual journey? Some of these being frequent, others being infrequent. And today we'll see that not only do we encounter God in spiritual growth, but spiritual birth is always marked at the very beginning when a person becomes a follower of Jesus and is forgiven. That is always marked by an encounter with the living God. Spiritual birth is always an encounter with the living God. Our churches today are full of people who believe in certain Bible creeds or ways of living or principles of life. There are many people in our churches today that have a head knowledge of God but have never had an encounter with the living God. They've never had an encounter with the living God even for spiritual birth. They believe many things, but they've never been marked inwardly by a change. And many in our churches today don't even realize it. They didn't even know the difference. And here's why this is so concerning. Because the people in the church who've just had a head knowledge of God are good moral people with good Christian values. And so outwardly, they don't look much different than those who have had an encounter inwardly and yet have never responded to an encounter with God for salvation. And this is kind of concerning, because if there's a general sense of good Christian values among the masses, it's harder to see outwardly who has had an encounter with the living God of spiritual birth and who hasn't. Who's just following a certain kind of lifestyle of creed of life, and others who are actually engaged with God in a relationship. And this is actually the story of one of the most riveting parables in the Bible that Jesus gives, called the prodigal son. Many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with it. Most people think that the story of the prodigal son is about Jesus teaching about the younger son who wastes his inheritance on wild living and then comes back humbled and ready to submit to his father, and his father welcomes him with open arms. And we focus our attention on how God will always take us back, no matter how far we've strayed. And they think that's the purpose of that story. And certainly there are aspects of that message that do ring true. And there's certainly application for that aspect of the parable. But that's actually not the main emphasis of the parable. The primary meaning of the parable is about the older son, not the younger one who wastes his inheritance. It's about the older son. And we know that that is the primary message because of the context of the passage. When you're interpreting the Bible, there are three keys. And the three keys are very similar to the keys of looking for a house to buy. What are the three keys of real estate? What are the three keys of real estate? Three words, right? What is it? Location, location, location. When it comes to interpreting the Bible, it's the same thing. It's context, context, context. You have to interpret the Bible within the context that it's given. And so if we look at the context of this parable, we see that it's not just about the younger son. In fact, it's more about the older son. Because Jesus is giving this parable to a bunch of religious leaders who studied and knew the Bible better than anyone. They had the creeds. They had the head knowledge. They knew the Bible better than anyone else knew the Bible. They were moral people. But their hearts were very cold toward God. They never had a spiritual birth. They never responded to a lifestyle of encountering God. It was all about the head knowledge and the belief system. And so before I read the story and make a few comments, let me remind you of the cultural context that we're in here in Northeast Indiana or in the Midwest. It's really important for us to understand our own cultural context so that we can understand the message of Scripture within the backdrop of where we live today. We live in what is called a Christendom culture. And let me explain what a Christendom culture is. It's a society where the dominant influence is not followers of Jesus spiritually engaging the community to turn hearts to God, but a society where the institutional church helps maintain Christian values among as many people as possible. This culture is usually marked by high church attendance, good moral living, people believe in the absolutes, and an approach to faith based on respecting and living out a set of biblical creeds. People respect the Bible, they respect the notion of absolute truth, and they respect people who go to church. And most people have some affiliation with the church. This is called a Christendom culture, and this is the culture that we live in. Now, the U.S. is, in essence, a Christendom culture, but if you look on the edges of the U.S., the East and West Coast, they are becoming more and more post-Christendom, and that is spreading to the middle and the South. But you look in the middle, the Midwest, and the Deep South, it's still very much a Christendom culture. Church, very respected. Absolutes, very respected. A belief in God in general. Here's the premise of a Christendom culture. The Bible has the best values in the world to live by. And if a society lives by biblical values, it will be the best place to live. And so the mission of the institutional church is to influence people to live out Christian values. Things like love your neighbor, take care of the poor, be honest, have integrity, stand up against injustice. And if the church can help people live out these Christian morals, that's the role of the church. If we can get you to love your neighbor more and treat people with respect, then we're accomplishing our mission. And let's be clear. Those are all good and biblical principles, and certainly we want people to follow those biblical principles. But let's be also crystal clear. That is not the mission of the church. Our mission is not to create moral people who respect the Bible and adhere to Christian values. That is deception. Our mission is to lead people to encounter the living God by being changed from within as people respond in faith to Jesus and have a vibrant relationship with Him that's living and active, that continues to change us from the inside, and then in turn changes our character and changes our values. You see, one has a focus on the externals. Let's just get people to do the right thing. The other has the focus of the internal. And the mission of the church is crystal clear. And the challenge we have is that the institutional church finds itself veering toward this idea that we just got to help people do the right thing and respect the Bible and have good Christian morals. Whether or not you lay down your life for Jesus, that's, you know, for the radicals. What we're just trying to get people to do is love your neighbor and treat the poor well and have integrity. The fundamental difference I'm talking about here is between a relationship with the living God and a religion where you're learning a set of creeds to live by. And the chasm could not be more vast. And we have to be crystal clear in our minds of the difference, because subtly we simply begin to migrate toward this idea that, okay, well, we're here to help people live out Christian values. Does this make sense? Are you guys tracking with me? You see, a vibrant relationship with God means you're interacting with Him personally. He's interacting with you. You're encountering Him. He's encountering you. It's a relationship of love and intimacy and closeness. Just for example, while we were singing those songs, was there an encounter with God as you were singing those songs? Did you actually sense His presence here, or was it simply going through the motions? Now, that we're going to be all across the board on that one. But I'm asking the question, was your heart drawn close to God, and was He close to you, and was the music a means, or was it like, okay, well, when are these songs going to get over with, or I like that song, or I don't like that song? You see, a religion is a set of standards and principles to live by, a set of creeds, a set of rights and wrongs you adhere to. It's not about a relationship. And what we see in the prodigal son parable is that neither son had an inward love for their dad. Neither of them did. And one of them, the younger son, it was obvious because his outward life, he was rebellious. But here's the thing, for the older son, it wasn't obvious, because his outward life, he was adhering to the expectations. So you see the two sons, the older son adhering to the expectations, having the values, but his heart not changed. The younger son not having a heart changed, but not having the values either. So it was clear. And this is the context, as Jesus is contrasting these two sons to a group of religious leaders who studied the Bible more than anybody. And this is what He says. Let's read it. If you have a Bible, just look at it. Luke chapter 15. Let's just read it together. And with that backdrop, let's understand what Jesus is saying. And with the backdrop that we're living in today, let's make the applications. So let's look at it, Luke chapter 15, and Jesus says this, beginning at verse 11. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided the property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. And after he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. And when he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him." It's an amazing story. The son said to him, "Father, I've sinned against heaven. I've sinned against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." Complete repentance, inward change. But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him." I don't care how far he strayed, his heart has now been warmed and changed. "Put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet, bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he's found." So they began to celebrate. You would think the story would end there. It's a great story, right? Not the point of the story. Now we're going to get to the point. And as Jesus is dealing with his audience, knowing where they're at spiritually, he continues the story. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. And when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. And so he called one of his servants and asked him what was going on. "Well, see, your brother's come. And your father has killed a fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. Isn't this amazing?" The other brother became angry. Now what has always been in his heart, even though he's adhered outwardly, now it's starting to come out. The other brother being angry refused to go. "I'm not going in." So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your order. I had all the creeds. I was living the lifestyle. I never disobeyed. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, and you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Now the story ends on a positive note for the younger son who was engaged in wild living but had a changed heart. Unfortunately, the story ends on a negative note for the older son. And it's no accident. And it's why Jesus told that parable. Why did the story end negatively for the older son? Well, let's just make sure that we understand the contrast between the two sons. So the younger son's heart was far from God, and his outward life matched his inward lostness. It was obvious to everybody. He squandered his wealth. He's off in wild living. Everybody knew. Clear. Outwardly, inwardly, it was consistent. The older son's heart was far from God, just like the younger son. But his outward life didn't match his inward lostness. Therefore, it wasn't obvious. It was inconsistent. You see the difference? You see the commonality and the difference. The commonality is both had hearts that were far from God. One was expressing that outwardly. The other was still adhering to the standards of expectation around him. The older son had institutional thinking. Now, you wouldn't call it Christendom thinking back then, but that's what it is. Here's what I want everyone to know this morning. Whether you have Christian morals or bad morals, We need to have a relationship with God, not a religion. And part of that relationship is having times in which we're encountering the living God, starting with the foundational encounter. The foundational encounter is your spiritual birth, which is your decision to repent and believe. It's an inward decision. And then it changes you from the inside, and then you begin to see outward changes. Salvation is a one-time event that happens when you believe in your heart and confess with your mouth, as Romans 10 says. No one's born a Christian. It is a decision that's made once you understand your sin and your need for forgiveness. It may happen when you're a child, or it may happen toward the end of your life. And if your salvation day is when you were living a very rebellious lifestyle, your testimony will be more dramatic than most. That's mine. But if your salvation day began as a child, or if you grew up in a strong Christian home, or if you were living out general moral Christian values, your salvation testimony may not be as outwardly dramatic, but it clearly is inwardly as dramatic. So there may be this wide range. I want you just to imagine the two sons coming here this morning and saying, hey guys, we both have testimonies to share. The younger son says, look, the older son says, here's my testimony, guys. Like I was living out, you know, trying to live the good morals, and yet my heart was not there. I didn't have a relationship, and all of a sudden, God changed my heart. The younger son says, well, my testimony is, my heart wasn't right either, but I was like actually expressing that out in my life. And so my testimony is there was this massive outward change. The other brother says there wasn't like this massive outward change, but there was a massive inward change. And they're both going church to church and sharing their testimony. And let me ask you, if you were up here sharing your testimony, which would it be? Would it be more like the older son? Like, hey, look, I had, you know, basic Christian values, but God changed my heart, and now I'm walking with him. Or was it, you know, my life was actually just totally following the world's way of life, and I've been dramatically changed. And somewhere on that continuum, every single person who's a follower of Jesus is somewhere on that continuum. It's just a matter of where, if you've had spiritual birth. Now, if you haven't had spiritual birth yet, then you've fallen into the institutional mindset. Like, okay, well, I'm just trying to be a good person. I'm just trying to respect the Bible. I'm just trying to love my neighbor. And if the focus is on those things, then what you actually have is religion. We're going to watch a video. And so a couple of years ago, one of our teenagers came to Christ. And then his sister and mom and brother started coming to grace. And the dad hadn't been coming to grace at all, and had an opportunity to meet the dad about a year ago. And seemed like a really nice guy, and I just felt like, you know, I just need to start praying for him. And started praying for him, this was a year ago, every day. As I pray at 10:03 every day for people who I felt like maybe are open to God. And so I've been praying. I prayed for him every day. And then this spring, just felt like, okay, I've been praying for him every day. It's time to see if he's, how much he's open to God. And so I asked him if he'd be willing to do a Seeking God study. We were at the McConaughey's graduation party for Grace. And I knew that day, I thought he was going to be there. And I said, okay, I've been praying for him for 6 months every day. It's time to at least ask him. He may say no, which is fine. And so I asked him. And then he and a few others and Scott, we led this together. And here's he got baptized two or three weeks ago. But here's some of his testimony. Let's watch this.
Hi, I'm Kelly Green, and today we're going to dive deeper into my baptism and my religious background. I grew up in the Catholic faith. I had parents that loved me. We spoke about Jesus often in the home. Went to an elementary Catholic grade school. We went to church every day, grades 1 through 6. But it always seemed like it was a routine, or that it was something that was expected. Didn't really feel like it was a relationship with Jesus or God. And as I became older, as an adult, never really felt that connection. Growing up Catholic, my parents had good intentions for me. I went through a baby baptism, a dedication. I also was confirmed as a youth, and grew up and went to a spiritual-based college. So as a youth, I remember the approach and preparation for confirmation. I remember attending classes. I remember meeting with the priests. I remember speaking with nuns. And I remember the day of, as a child, committing myself to a life with Jesus Christ. I remember going home, having a party, and getting a BMX bike. As I got older, I remembered that as an adult, I just felt there was more to that day. So fast forwarding on to after marriage, Kath and I got married. We have three beautiful kids. We wanted them to have a relationship with God, but we were all over the board. I mean, we went through baby baptisms. We went through different churches. We shifted around a lot, and it never really seemed to solidify until our middle son, Cooper, started attending Grace Gathering. So we followed Cooper to Grace Gathering. First Cooper, then Kathy, then Caleb, then Courtney. And to be honest, it took me a long time to follow myself. But I'm thankful for it, because I was introduced to the Grace Gathering family. So after my introduction to Grace Gathering, I was at Paul and Ella's Grace's graduation party, and Chris Norman approached me and asked me to join a Bible study. I wouldn't be the first person that you would ever think that would ever say yes to joining a Bible study, but I felt in my heart that it was the right thing to do, and I find myself that I was excited when I told Chris, yeah, I would be interested in joining a Bible study with you. So we started the Seeking God Bible study. It was Chris Norman, Scott Jester, Karsten Lockmuller, Joe Freeman, and myself. And the group was awesome. Going through the book, it was really well written. I would recommend it to anybody who hasn't actually experienced that in joining a group of that caliber. But during it, we got into the three B's. We were talking about beauty, we were talking about brokenness, and we were talking about birth. And during that, I realized that my event of spiritual birth as a youth really was a memory of a BMX bike. And I knew that it was so much more to that event, or what I wanted that event to be in my life, in my relationship with Jesus, that I knew that there was more that I needed to do. So almost exactly a year that I was over at the Norman's house, meeting Chris for the first time, going through a Bible study with him, realizing that my past was more about ritual and motions and not really a relationship with God, determining during Seeking God that there was more for me in my relationship with Jesus Christ. So on November 11th, 2018, I decided to be baptized. I asked my son Cooper to baptize me along with Scott Jester. That day was probably the most awesome day that I've ever had in my life, besides probably marrying my wife and having my children. But for my overall relationship and where I am with my faith, there couldn't have been a better day for me. So the reason that I wanted to be baptized was, like I said, I wanted it to be more memorable for me rather than just about a BMX bike. And the simple fact with my faith, when I think about baptism and what Jesus Christ, that he died for you, he died for me, that it's a very easy commitment for me to openly say that I love him, I accept him into my heart, and that I want to live a better life than what I'm living today with him in it and him a part of it. So even though it took me a year from the time that I met the Normans to the time that I decided that I needed to be baptized, never did I ever feel that Jesus had left me or forsaken me, for he is good and great and he is always around us. Hi, I'm Kelly Green, and today we're going to dive deeper into my...
Well, let's just bow in prayer. And let me just ask you, how has God spoken to you this morning? Like, what resonated this morning? Is your story more like the younger son? More like the older son? What is your story? Or do you not feel like you have a story yet because you've been just trying to follow creeds and ways of thinking, actually haven't had an inward change where you've surrendered your heart to Jesus and encountered his grace and his presence? Where are you at? Where does God want to bring you? Maybe today's the day you say, you know what? I want to surrender my life to Jesus. I want to move from just head knowledge to seeing my heart change inwardly and have a relationship with God, not just follow a set of standards. I just want to give you an opportunity just to pause and just tell God that. Just in your own heart, he's right here. He's right here. He's right close to you. Maybe today's the day of your salvation. Today's the day you repent and believe in your heart